effective fitness combatives mission is to provide quality content and education for law enforcement officers through proven science-driven fitness and combatives. This EFC user course is a complete online program designed to elevate your approach to combatives with the ability to learn and train anywhere, anytime. Access the course materials through your browser at efcombatives.com or from the EF Combatives app available for download through Apple and Google Play stores. The course is broken down into easy-to-digest micro-learning modules, enabling you to move through the lecture, technique demonstration videos, and additional resources at your own pace. You also have direct access to industry-leading instructors for questions and feedback related to your training. After completion of this course, you will receive an EFC user certification that is valid for 2 years. We highly suggest you continue your combatives training at an EFC certified academy and continue on to other advanced courses within our curriculum. EF Combatives and EFT will be attending the TAC Ops Law Enforcement Training Conference this year in Verona, New York, April 25th through the 28th. EFC's very own Jay Wadsworth, Director of Combatives and co-founder, will be there teaching defensive tactics, things like weapons-based entanglements, single officer apprehension, handcuffing procedures, searching procedures, and so on and so forth. Jay is a wealth of knowledge, and you will learn a lot just from that short stint at this conference. Be sure to check us out at booth 416 and say hi to the team. If we can help you out in any way, don't hesitate to ask. At this conference, there's going to be over 150 vendors showcasing the latest tools and technology, networking opportunities at the event, raffle prizes throughout the day. And don't forget, there's also two more TACOPS conferences this year, Nashville, Tennessee, August 23rd through the 25th, and then also Washington, D.C., September 6th through the 8th. Be sure to check the TACOPS website for more information and how to register. Welcome to the Be Effective Podcast, episode 66, Mr. Andrew Keith. Andrew is a police officer, 14 years experience on patrol, and 9 years of that experience being on the SWAT team. He's currently a firearms instructor, former canine handler, current DT instructor, master class IDPA shooter, and master class USPSA and carry optics, and a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Andrew is also partnering with Effective Fitness Shooting to create a dry fire course to help you improve your proficiency with your firearm in preparation for academy testing. In this episode, we discuss just that, the importance of dry fire and improving on the fundamentals of firearm training and firearm safety to become a more proficient and accurate shooter. If you are new to the show, be sure you subscribe. If you like the show, support for the podcast, please be sure to leave a 5-star review. Without further ado, episode 66, my friend, Mr. Andrew Keith, enjoy. Elephant in the room, Memphis Police Department's body cam footage was recently available to the general public. They released like five or six videos from different sources. Most of them, obviously, body cam. Some was like, I think, like a street cam or whatever the case may be. But pretty bad, beyond bad. You and I have talked about this at length, but not really. I wouldn't even say it's a training issue. I would say it's more of a standards issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's appalling to watch simply because it's at no point in the video did I see a video that appeared to be police officers taking a suspect into custody. Like at no point did I get that vibe from watching that video. I got the vibe that I'm watching five people murder another human being. And it's completely unacceptable. And when you ask why or how could this come to be, I mean, it comes from this whole war on police or whatever you want to call it, this whole dissatisfaction by, you know, whomever, the people protesting or the left, whoever you want to pin it on. But when you have that sort of societal issue going on where everybody's hating the police, well, nobody wants to become the police, but the police still have to fill their numbers, so they start dropping standards where, you know, the entire process of becoming a police officer, when I did it, years ago is basically trying to figure out if you're a decent human being. Like, do you normally, through background checks, psychological, polygraphs, all of this, like, are you pretty honest? Are you pretty, predisposed to living life within the rules set forth in America? Are you generally a good person? Have you been through your entire life? And that's where they dive into that. And so then you start laxing those up and you say, well, before, you could never have committed a crime and be a police officer here. Now it's like, well, you can commit some crimes, you can do some drugs, where does it stop? And it's like, when you relax all that and you start looking into people's backgrounds and you're like, well, we're going to allow, somebody that has stolen some stuff in the past, as an adult has stolen some stuff. We're just going to say, well, it's just stealing. So we'll just allow them to become police officers. We'll still post certify. And you start getting people that have a predisposition to fucking crime, and you're making them fucking cops. And then, if you think bad shit's not going to come from that, you're out of your damn mind.
No, I agree.
It's like, I'm a Charlie Beckwith guy. You know who Charlie Beckwith is?
I do not.
Charlie Beckwith is the guy who started Delta in the Army. And Charlie Beckwith was known to say, I would rather go up shit creek with 7 studs than 100 shitheads. And so it's like, I would rather be shorthanded and have well-trained, capable police officers and only have 5 of them than to have an entire department full of shitheads who aren't capable police officers or predisposed to commit crimes on their own. Like, I'd rather just be shorthanded.
And I agree. I definitely agree there. And two, there is a video for those, we've made posts on multiple platforms regarding this incident. And Memphis PD has a video. You could actually Google Memphis Police Department lowering standards, and there is a video of Memphis Police Department representatives talking about lowering standards for applicants and even offering bonuses. So just like you said, when you're predisposed to possibly committing crimes, then what do you expect? It's one of those things. Like, the first time I watched it, I sat there with the video and with the post, and I was talking to my wife, and I was like, I literally don't know what to say. Like, I was kind of like, just watched a dude literally get murdered. But that's what it was. It had nothing to do with law enforcement. It was a dude getting murdered. It seemed very personal. And I've been told multiple things from multiple people that, he may have slept with one of the officer's wives, and there was some personal type of relationship there. So I'm sure that'll all come out, and obviously we want justice to be served appropriately and swiftly as possible. But yeah, there's really no justification for that.
No, absolutely not
in any shape or form. And there was a point somebody made. Well, I think at some point in one of the body cam footage, you can hear them say, "Well, he reached for my gun." And Jay and I had talked about that on a live feed a few days ago, and yeah, I mean, if somebody does have their hand on your gun, sure, that is obviously the escalation of force into the deadly range. But once the hand is removed and you have that weapon retained, force now has to be reevaluated. And at that point in time, deadly force is then not authorized. And that's just one of those things where a lot of people have a hard time. Well, he grabbed the officer's gun. Well, there isn't, like, if you grab the officer's gun 5 years ago, you can't walk up to him and shoot him again. Like, it's just, there's there's somewhat of a statute of limitations on that.
The grabbing the gun is a reach, man. That's a reach.
It's a super reach, dude.
That guy could have been taken into custody after he was extracted from the car. And this is all assuming that the traffic stop was appropriate, that the traffic stop was legal. Right. So once they extract him from the car and he hits the ground, he should have been cuffed within like seconds. Maybe a minute, depending on how hard he really wants to try to resist. Like, you take y'all's program, EFC, or even just basic jujitsu, right? Even a blue belt in jujitsu, even a 2-star white belt in jujitsu, like, they're cuffing that guy in like a couple of seconds. The fight should have never been long enough for him to grab the gun. The fight should have never, you know, went on and on and on, because the goal wasn't to take him into custody. Those five guys had the goal of, you know, beating this guy for whatever reason, and they wound up beating him to death. And so, you know, for the record, I hope they spend the rest of their lives in prison, and I assume they probably will. But
absolutely,
because you got the murder charge, and then you're going to have all the federal 1983 violations and all the other charges that are going to go with it. So, you know, enjoy prison, motherfucker.
Yeah, I mean, and
if somebody wants to fight, I'm all about it. Let's get after it. But you know, like at some point, the entire video should have the vibe of officers trying to take somebody into custody, not some just video of five guys beating one guy to death.
No, custody and control is, you know, is the goal there, right? That is, and you know, let's say that they were good people, right? Because those weren't good people.
No,
that's no. Just
a beating doesn't last that long. There's nothing honorable about it.
Like if they are good people, just like you said, if one person had been trained in some type of ground defense, you know, martial art, jiu-jitsu, it would have been over. I mean, the dude was 145 pounds, right? Like, he wasn't a big guy.
And I mean, I was a kid when Rodney King happened, you know, and, you know, I was like 12 years old when Rodney King happened. And I remember seeing that video on TV, and, you know, that was bad. Yeah, that was not a pleasant video to watch. And then you have this that makes the Rodney King thing look like a Swedish massage compared to this. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. Like, there's no honor in five dudes beating the shit out of one guy and beating him to death. I don't give a damn what job they have or not.
And for what?
Yeah, for,
I mean, it doesn't really matter for what.
Clearly, but, no reason.
Right. That's what I was saying. Like, he wasn't resisting. If anything, he was passively resisting, and a passively resisting suspects are relatively easy.
Well, and that many impacts to the skull. I mean, with that many hits to the head, I mean, how was he? He might not have been resisting at all. He might have just been,
dude, the guy,
you know, kind of not even really there, you know, like
defending himself,
not really conscious, the old standing eight count kind of deal, you know?
Yeah. I mean, when you start kicking people in the head and you start beating them with batons, a switch flips in them, fight or flight or freeze, right? Like, one of the things are going to happen. This is why, you know, whenever we teach, we talk about guys that are, you know, when you have five guys or four guys and everybody's striking the dude, like maybe they're striking him in the face and they're putting he's putting his hands to cover his face. Well, yeah, if I started punching you in the face, what's your natural reaction? Well, you're going to cover your face because you don't want to get hit in the face, and you can't say, well, show me your hands. You're asking the guy to show you your hands, but you're beating him in the face. You're almost making it a lot harder for him to actually listen to, and maybe he is trying to comply. But I'm not just going to take free punches to the dome, right? Like, that's just not how that works. And this is why, again, being a good person, obviously step one, and then having high quality training, obviously is a key factor there. And again, and this wasn't a training issue, but I did want to address it before we kind of got into our topic, because obviously it's been a hot topic in the news. And to kind of go to the next topic here, we hope justice is served swiftly, and those officers are held accountable for their actions. Don't be a piece of shit.
Yeah, it's definitely get some good training, like, you know, like y'all's EFC program. There's other programs out there, but it, you know, at least with EFC, you got Jay's background of he's been a cop a long time, he's been a black belt a long time, and you start meshing those together, and you get an end product that is exactly what you're looking for: how to take somebody into control, into custody, not just how to win the fight per se. You know, it's like, yeah, jiu-jitsu can teach you how to win, but the goal is not winning on the street. The win, quote unquote, is getting them in custody, and that's the end of it.
Right. And that's kind of what, you know, one thing I tell cops, especially new cops, is, you know, you're not here to win the individual. You're here to win the situation. Right. And that could mean a variety of things, because maybe the situation isn't requiring you to control that subject at that time. Maybe the situation is you creating distance and getting to a better position of cover. Maybe you're, you know, maybe winning the situation is dropping less lethal and having to go to lethal, or putting away lethal and having to go hands on, whatever the force is necessary and reasonable, right? But yeah, that that whole thing about experience, that's, again, one thing we harp on is having that experience, especially in this profession as it pertains to use of force, is super important. Again, it goes beyond just the actual techniques and concepts and principles, but also the documentation side, the reporting side, the environment side. It's kind of hard to talk about what it's like to be on the traffic stop if you've never been on a traffic stop, right? It's very hard to say what it's like to use force if you've never used force, right? Yeah, maybe like a UFC fight or like, you know, a grappling match, you know, yeah, but it's just the environment is completely different. Just like you said, the end goal and the purpose is entirely different. It's not like, check out this inside heel hook and I'm gonna put him in handcuffs. Yeah, it's not, it's may look cool, and I'm a huge fan of inside heel hooks, but also I'm also a huge fan of subject control and officers going home safely, and not only safely, but also not being indicted for doing dumb shit.
Yeah, exactly. There's a big difference in winning the fight and having to make legal decisions during a fight. Those are two different things.
Huge. Huge.
You know, if your goal is just submitting someone who has stepped on a mat with you, and you clearly know that they don't have any weapons under their gi or under their rash guard, that's a little different monster than having to grab a hold of somebody who you have no idea what they have on them, but you have to get them into custody right now, and you have to make legal decisions to keep you in your house and not in prison on the fly based on what they're doing and you're having to react to. So it's when you add that experience in with the capability, it's a lot better than just, you know, going to someone who's really good at the fight part, but not so good at the, or has no experience at the making legal decisions on the fly.
Agreed. No, I definitely agree. So for those that don't train, you should definitely train. Whether it be with EFC or any other legitimate company or individual that has law enforcement experience. But that being said, let's talk some dry fire. We know dry fire is stupid, right, Andrew? Dry fire is dumb. You should never do it. It's a waste of your time.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks to suck. So, you know, yeah. if you want to suck, just don't practice.
That's just the rumor going around. So
yeah. I really suck at violin because I don't own one and I don't practice. So it's safe to say that
right.
I'm a terrible violin player.
So before we go any further, you've been on the podcast a few times before because you're the man, and give people a little bit about your background as it pertains to, I mean, obviously law enforcement, jiu-jitsu, but also as it pertains to your competitive shooting background.
Oh, well, I'm working on my 15th year of law enforcement. I took a brief break for about a year, and now I'm back at it again. In that time, I have been on our SWAT team. I've handled a K-9 for a few years. Been on patrol the whole time. Defensive tactics instructor, firearms instructor, all that crap. About 5 years ago, I got into competitive shooting, kind of started with IDPA, then got into USPSA. I picked up masterclass in USPSA carry optics last year. I picked up masterclass in enhanced service pistol and IDPA a few years ago. I enjoy it. Love it. I'm a black belt in jiu-jitsu for that. Don't really mean jack shit about guns, but
you know. Kind of does. You have to wear a black belt when you go to the range, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's the same thing.
So this is the important part, is let's talk about some of the biggest problems that we're seeing right now. Yes, we can talk about actual law enforcement engagements where the hit rate is between 18 to 20%, I believe is the ratio. So 8 misses, 2 hits, to 10 shots for those that aren't good at ratios.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's not good. So Andrew, what do you think this problem stems from? Because obviously when you first picked up a pistol, you obviously weren't a masterclass shooter, right? You obviously had to work up to that point. But what would you say that the problem is, you know, maybe starting from your military or even law enforcement career to where you realized you were lacking in certain areas?
You know, when I first started competing, probably my first match, I went out there and I was like, you know, I had it in my mind, like there was a pretty high standard for, I was already a firearms instructor. I was already on the SWAT team. Those were two, you had to kind of shoot your way into those. Like you had to try out for those and you had to pass, like you had to shoot 95 or 6% on the qual or better at the department. So there was a shooting standard that I met in my academy class. I got the little Top Gun award for having the best score. So, you know, I went out there and I thought, you know, okay, I've never done this before. So, I mean, obviously I'm not going to win. Yeah. But, you know, I was like, I won't do too bad. Like, you know, like I expected to, you know, go out there and, you know, be learning the game of, you know, the USPSA game or whatever. And then I went out there and got my ass beat. There was a whole level of shooting that was occurring that I had never seen before. Like I didn't know certain things were even possible. Like to watch a GM shoot when it's your first match is like watching someone do a fucking magic trick and you have no idea how they did it. You know, it's like, what is happening? There was a whole different gear, a whole different speed there that I didn't even know existed. Yeah. And so instead of, you know, getting my ego hurt when I got the shit kicked out of me and I finished less than halfway through the field that day and leaving USPSA and never coming back, I thought, well, I mean, if these people can do it, I can too. I just got to figure out how, you know? And so I started dry firing and getting online and finding professional shooters, asking them questions online and going to their training and things like that. And just kind of fell in love with competitive shooting. And ever since then, I've just been doing it.
You've been posting a lot about that stuff. And I definitely enjoy sending stuff to you and getting your opinion on there. You know, I've done a few combat. I was on my agency's, I don't even really call it that, but they had like a shooting team. And I went to a few competitions. Just like you said, first time you go see guys who do this, like this is their thing. You realize just like in jiu-jitsu, there's levels. There's levels and and you realize how fucking slow you are and how not accurate you are at being slow.
Well, the problem in law enforcement, I think the problem in law enforcement is we tend to put the cart before the horse in most trainings. And so it's like, you know, in an officer involved shooting or gunfight or whatever, however you want to label it, there's the most important skill there is the shooting, right? Like I can't hide behind cover long enough to win a gunfight. I can't out footwork a gunfight. I can put myself in, those things put me in a good position. But at some point, if I want to win or I want to stop this person, I have to shoot back, you know? And if I can't do the shooting back, then it really doesn't matter how cool I looked doing an entry and how good my footwork was, or how quickly I got behind cover. Like it just doesn't matter. If you can't shoot, none of the rest of the shit matters. You know, it doesn't matter if you can shoot nice tight groups. Can you shoot them quick and fast enough to have a positive outcome,
right,
in this particular, you know, situation? It's like, sure, should every police officer given infinite time be able to shoot a tight group? Cool. But can you, you know, can you run a 2-second bill drill, you know, which is 7 yards, draw and fire 6 shots to the A zone of USPSA target in 2 seconds. Can you do that? You know, because it's like, that's an important skill. That drill helps you with recoil management. It helps you get your grip tuned up. It helps you track your sights while you're actually firing. All of these things that, you know, it helps your vision be able to take in limited information, a very small amount, you know, just seeing your sight come back down and you tell yourself that's good enough, press another round. And you keep going through it. I mean, there's a speed of shooting that is mostly visual there that once you get the fundamentals all tuned up, you just drive it with your vision, but you have to practice. It's never going speed. You know, I used to hear all the time, I'll just, you know, keep working on it. Speed will come. Just keep shooting. Speed will come. No, it won't. Speed's not going to show up to your front door and knock on it one day with its bags and be like, hey, I'm coming to live with you now, Adam. You've shot your, you know, 11,000th round. I'm here now. We can start to go fast. It's like, no, to go fast or to get fast, you got to go fast. And that's where you go out to the square range or the flat range and you start just going fast, and you're going to throw some misses. You're going to fail, but you're, what you don't realize is that your brain is starting to process information faster. And if you keep going fast and you keep, you know, dancing between the edge of your comfort zone and just outside your comfort zone level speeds, you start getting faster and you start getting better. If you just do the same old shit that you're always comfortable with, you're going to always be where you are now.
It's almost like consistency with beneficial quality direction and guidance pays off. Magic.
Oh, absolutely. Because we all kind of like, if you can't do, you don't have the understanding. That's what bothers me, like with some firearms instructors, right? It's like, if you can't do, or at one point in your life, you know, because let's say, like, you know, Rob Latham, the GOAT, one of the greatest shooters to ever live, probably the greatest shooter to ever live. At some point, Rob's going to get too old, right? He's not going to be able to run around like he once did. He may not be able to shoot like he once did, but he once did. So his information is still good. Just because he may not, you know, be able to have the same trigger speed that he always had. But, you know, there's a lot of people.
It's like John Danaher.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there who never have done, and they don't understand. They don't have this depth of understanding in shooting. They just regurgitate what they've always heard, and it becomes the old dogma. You know, the shit like pin the trigger to the rear. You should never do that. Never. Not even once in your life. That was one of the hardest habits I had to break. Never. Never do that. Ever. It does nothing for you. But yet we still, to this day, there are departments that teach it. And it's a terrible, terrible habit that you'll have to break later if you ever want to be any good.
Agreed. Yeah. And two, that kind of brings me to my point is, I remember when I was at the academy, it was very basic, obviously, firearms familiarization, nomenclature of the pistol, blah, 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 blah. Super basic stuff that you probably already know if you're anything familiar with weapons. You know, they start with the, you know, safety rules, and then they move up to, you know, obviously how to discharge a round into a safe direction.
You put the bullets in here and they come out.
Yeah, man, but you'd be surprised, dude. People putting bullets in backwards. We had one chick, I can't remember which agency she went to, but she put 9mm rounds in her 40 during a night qual, and the instructor looked at the target, and the target looked like it was shot with a shotgun. Basically, like the bullets were coming out, you know, coming out the ding, 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 you know, all the way down the barrel, and like just ripping the target. And she obviously still a cop, I think, or maybe not. I don't know. I had a lot of people in my academy class, but anyways, you know, when I went through, it was just very basic. It wasn't anything like super high speed. It was super fundamental, but it was also not even the right fundamentals, right? I too was taught pin the trigger to the rear, cycle the gun, slowly let the trigger out, wait for the click. And then once you reach that wall, then you re-engage. And just like you, when I got into, you know, when I got more familiar with shooting and I was, you know, practicing, would have to go to practices, I realized, like, man, why am I so slow? Why are these guys split times way shorter than mine, way smaller than mine? It's because they were literally slapping the trigger as fast as they possibly could while holding the sights on target. Once you realize that, then you have to like almost retrain your brain, and it can be frustrating. Once that foundation is laid, it's obviously trying to retrain something that's been ingrained in you from the beginning can be very difficult. Now, granted, I had some previous firearms trainings before I became a cop, so it wasn't too terribly difficult, but just like you said, why this only sets a poor foundation, right? So why are we doing it? This episode is brought to you by Officer Privacy. Right now, data broker websites are posting your name and address online, which puts you and your family in danger. Anti-cop organizations use this information to harass and even dox you and your families without you even seeing it coming. Officer Privacy is a law enforcement owned and operated organization that specializes in removing your personal information from the internet. When you sign up with Officer Privacy, they will remove information from dangerous databases all over the world so that you can enjoy an extra layer of protection and privacy. Officer Privacy also monitors these sites so that if anyone tries to put up your information, they will take it back down. Reduce your chances of being a victim and protect you and your family's private information. Go to officerprivacy.com/beeffective to sign up and learn more.
Oh yeah. It's like you always eat at every level, you have to give out certain information, right? So it's like, if you're at a, a pretty basic level, it's probably not the time to start talking about moving and shooting or shooting on the move or, you know, really driving transitions between targets. That's probably not the time if we're at a very basic level. But you have to set the foundation at the basic level, what information you're giving them there as you bring them along, that it later on it doesn't contradict. You know, like if we're just training people to pass quals, well, I mean, shit, the quals are pretty easy. Like there's probably not a police qual out there that would be very difficult for anyone in USPSA that is a high B class level or above. So if that's your goal, your goal is not very high. If your goal is to make the best shooter possible, then you have to go through that. And I think it's an interesting point too. When you talk about making the best shooter possible or making the best, you know, fighter possible when it's a cop, you know, you're not talking about like actually, fighting people like in a ring. You're talking about controlling and cuffing people. When you're talking about shooting, you're not talking about go out there and shoot a whole bunch of people. The guys that are very skilled in combatives and very skilled in shooting, they shoot less people. They fight less people. The confidence that when you have a high level of those skills that permeates through the rest of your personality or behavior pattern, whatever you want to call it, it spreads to everything else. It's like, man, some of the most dangerous jiu-jitsu people I know, you know, my professor, Samuel Braga, dangerous guy. This guy can kick the shit out of me at will on the mats. And I'll weigh him by probably close to 50 pounds, but I can do nothing with him. He is one of the nicest people you'll ever talk to, man. He loves cops. He's the nicest guy. I mean, he's nice to everybody. He does, you know, kids classes. He'll dress up in his Yoda mask to entertain the kids during his kid classes sometimes. I mean, he's just the nicest guy. And he's also one of the most dangerous people I know.
Yeah.
And so it's like, if we get cops to those higher levels, then we don't have as many, I don't think we'll have as many asshole cops.
Oh, dude, I agree.
Because everybody around will be nice and skilled and they'll be like, dude, why are you being a dick to that person? You know, it's like, we don't do that here.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point, and we've often talked about this too, is the DT guys and the gun guys, they're so separate. I know when I was at the academy, we had a DT week and a firearms week, right? And I get why we have to have, like, you know, the firearm fundamentals and then, you know, the DT fundamentals, but at some point they should mesh together because they go together 100%. 10 out of 10 times your defensive tactics training and your firearms training will meet. And the scary part is sometimes they don't meet until an actual situation. And that's the scary part. Why are we still doing this? Why are we keeping them so separated to where that you have your gun guys and you have your DT guys? They should be both. They should literally be the same. Because
we went to a 40-hour course, Adam. We went to a 40-hour course.
And now we have a red shirt. And now we have a red shirt.
On anything.
We're experts. So this is the thing, is as it pertains to training certain aspects with your firearm. Now we're talking purely shooting here. Okay. Yes, it's good to integrate both. And you have to integrate both if you want to be an effective, well-rounded police officer, right? Or just anyone who wants to be prepared for possible violent encounter. But again, you have to focus on certain disciplines in order to improve. Like if you want to get good at getting into leg entries from half guard, right? I'll just throw that out there. Well, then you need to focus just on leg entries from half guard, right? You don't need to be focusing on like how to pass guard or, you know, any of this stuff, because then you can go down certain rabbit holes, right? Like if your goal is to get better at just drawing your gun, getting it out of the holster, you need to focus on have 1,000 reps a day, right? Of getting your gun out of the holster, right? So that focus training is important. So with that being said, how do you, for someone that's relatively newer to shooting, what are some of the issues you see and how can they kind of, you know, progress and become better?
You know, you're talking like the component skills, right? Everything has component skills that contribute to basically a bigger piece of the pie and a bigger piece of the pie until you get the whole deal, right? So it's like, you know, an overall police officer, if you want to be really good, they have to have certain component skills, you know, or component traits. They have to be fit, you know, they need some in-depth combative knowledge more than what we get. They need some in-depth shooting knowledge. Like, they need to be able to do any three of those things to be able to have those component skills for a situation that may require one or two or all of them, you know, not to mention law and policy knowledge and shit like that. So it's like, it's, we need to train all these component skills so that we have them. But it's like, if you want to get better at shooting, you have to do the same thing, right? So you have to be able to train the component skills. Things like dry fire, every pro shooter out there has dry fire. I don't, the best way, right? So the best way, if you want to get good at shooting, is to spend every penny you have on ammunition and live fire every single day, right? That's the best way. Unfortunately, it's not practical because we can't, most people can't afford that. Live fire can be expensive, so it's got to be utilized in a very focused manner. And so all the pros have dry fired at some point because they couldn't afford to just order a million rounds, you know, of ammunition to keep in their garage and just live fire every day. So they all utilize dry fire because, realistically speaking, if you're training, the only thing you can't train in dry fire really is the recoil part. You know, the accuracy part, they say, oh, well, if you don't have, you know, hold your target, you can't train the accuracy. Well, I'm reading the shot off my sights. My sights are telling me where the bullet is going to go. I don't have to have the hole popping up in the target is just a confirmation of what I should have already seen by paying attention to what my sights are doing.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, that's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, it's just a confirmation, man. I should already know. Like, when I'm shooting a match, I'm not really looking at bullet holes. I make my two shots, you know, per target, if that's what the course of fire is. I make my two shots on the target. I know if they're good or bad based on what I felt in my hands and what I saw in my sights, and then I move to the next target. I really don't know until the end exactly where those are, other than like, hey, they're in the A zone. I saw two good shots there, boom, boom, and I move. And you go back, and they typically will fall exactly where you thought they were. Now, you might have a close Charlie instead of an A zone. You got one that's like a half inch out, you know, because you're trying to go so fast, and you might have called it an A shot when off your sights when you were shooting. But, you know, nobody goes, oh man, that was two good alphas, and you go up there and it's like two complete misses.
But that visualization takes time and consistency to develop.
Oh, absolutely. Like, dry fire is where you get your consistency. Like, it's the Safariland 6000 series holster is, let's see, mine's a level 3, so it's got the hood and the ALS button. I think it's called the ALS button. I don't know. But it's got the hood and the button, right? So it's like, you can get pretty fast from those, but you have to create that in dry fire. You have to create indexing the gun appropriately. Your thumb has to come over, rock the hood down, hit the button, and the gun's got to come out. And it has to do all of those very efficiently to make that happen. So, you know, you start out kind of in slow motion. You know, if you want to get a good draw, start out kind of in slow motion and just go real slow to your gun, feel the gun where it touches you and you touch it. And those are like your index points, and just always bring that hand to that and make sure that thumb falls on the first retention device the same way. And then you disengage it the same, and then you hit the button, and then the gun comes out, and then you just start kind of picking up the pace, right? When you build that, I don't want to call it muscle memory because muscles don't have memory, but when you build that pathway in your brain to touch the gun a certain way, grip it a certain way.
It's like that mind-muscle connection.
Yeah, then you just start adding the speed to it, and you start testing yourself. How fast can I get the gun to presentation? You know, and timers really help with that because then it doesn't just seem fast. You can look at the numbers, and it tells you whether it is fast or not. And so, you know, timers are a big deal in dry fire. They're really good investment because there was times when I was trying to get my draw speed down early on where I would just, and I don't know, there might be other instructors that disagree with this, but like, I would start out, you know, my goal was to have a sub 1 second draw. And so I would start out with like 1.25 on my timer as a part time. So I get a start beep and an end beep. And so I would use that. And I would try to get there. And that was usually pretty comfortable for me after a while. So 1-2-5 was really good. And I'm like, okay. So then I'd drop it down to a second and I would go there. And then I would drop it down to like 0.8 and I'm trying to beat the par time. And then I'd drop it down to like 6.6. And I would just literally try to get my hands from point A to point B and catch a glimpse of my sight, just trying to build the hand speed. Because then when I dropped back to like 0.8 or 1 second, it felt, in my mind, it felt slow. And so right. I felt like I had plenty of time on my sights at 0.8 because I'd driven that hand speed so hard with 0.6 and 0.5 and just trying to drive it and get the gun out there. It wasn't useful. I wasn't using that as like, oh, I can get a 0.6 draw. I was just setting a par time that was well outside my comfort zone and just trying to get moving. And then I could go back to 0.8 or 1, either whichever, wherever the case may be, and really understand like, oh, I can see my sights at this speed. You can't just inch into it. You got to go outside your comfort zone, and then you got to kind of come back on the edge, and then you got to go outside again, and then come back on the edge. And it keeps dragging your comfort zone up along with it every time you do some pushing in like dry fire speeds and things like that, even on the range when you're trying to really, really burn down a course of fire. You got to push. You got to go fast to get fast.
You got to find that red line. You got to find that red line, and then you have to back off a little bit, find the issues, focus on those issues, and then keep driving forward and finding a new red line, right? That's always, that's all the best do it. JJ Rakaza, Shane Coley, mm-hmm. You know, I've kind of spoken with them and you, and it's all the same. Like everybody says all the same stuff. It's just, they may have a different way of saying it, but it's always like, I find that limit of failure. And then I try to hang out around that area for as long as possible. Yeah. And then I realize that my body can then adapt. And then I start to improve. Again, for those that don't shoot, but train jiu-jitsu, same thing with jiu-jitsu. Like you keep, maybe you're again, focusing on, let's say half guard sweeps and you keep focusing on it. And then all of a sudden you've, still getting smashed in bottom half guard, and that's a terrible place to be, right? But then all of a sudden you start to realize, oh, I maybe get my butterfly hook in and blah, 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 and I'm able to actually create, okay, cool, I created progress in here. Now, next time I get here, let me try this. But this is kind of like with dry fire, you don't need anybody else. You can just do it by yourself.
Yeah, your timer is going to be your push. You know, your timer is going to tell you how fast you're going, and then you have a goal time in mind, you know, of how fast can I go? You know, it's like, okay, well, if I'm calling good shots at a 0.8, well, I mean, shit, why not try a 0.6? Why not try it? Drive that hand.
I mean, yeah. Drive it up. See, what's the worst that happens? It beeps, and then you
exactly
do it on time. And you just, then you can just kind of reevaluate. So we had the importance of why dry fire is important and how it directly correlates to progress as it pertains to firearms, speed and accuracy, right? Because obviously we know that the hit rate's low. We know that usually starting out as a law enforcement officer, your firearms training is probably relatively, again, you may have some high speed guys at some academies and good for you if you do, but I would say for the vast majority, those that teach at the academy, no offense, sometimes it's just a cake retirement job. Right. It's just kind of a cake job and they're sitting there shooting rounds, training cops. And that's what they want to do because they've been, you know, they've put in maybe 10 or 12 years or maybe even 20 years on the street. Now they want to go to the academy and double dip. Right. Sometimes that happens and then they don't really improve their skill because they know everything. That's at least how mine, that's how my academy was.
Yeah, man. It's like if, it's not really hard. Why I like USPSA is because you are measured against everyone that is in USPSA. So there's this pool of, I think USPSA has something like 40,000 members or something like that. So you are compared to 40,000 people. And in that 40,000, so a quick little thing on how USPSA works so that when I'm speak on it, the listeners will kind of at least have a fundamental understanding. So hit factor scoring is what USPSA uses. Hit factor basically is points per second. So your target has areas, alpha hits are 5. Let's see, if you're shooting minor scoring factor, which is something we won't get into. So for carry optics, what I do, it's all minor. So for me, A-zone hits, which is center of the target, chest, and I guess the little eye box, you could call it, are alphas. So you get 5 points for every time you shoot a hole in that. Right outside of that is the C-zone. You get 3 points if you put something in the C-zone. And then you got that kind of the edge of the target is the delta zone. You get 1 point. And a miss, you get nothing. So hit factor is points per second. How many points can you accumulate per second? So you take time and your points, divide those, and that's your hit factor. So all of that is compared. So you could get, if you want to know where you are, look up some USPSA classifiers on this wonderful thing called Google. It'll show you pictures of them. It'll give you measurements. You can set them up exactly how they're set up at USPSA. Have a timer. Give yourself a start beep. Shoot it. Calculate your hit factor. And then look up in their classification system where you fall. And that's why I like USPSA, because 40,000 people, you know exactly where you fit in. There's no like, well, I'm the tactical, you know, big pecker guy here because I'm high speed and low drag. There's none of this talk. There's not a whole lot of talk about how badass you are. You are either D class, C class, B class, A, master, or grandmaster. And grandmasters and masters and even A class guys are really good shooters. They're really good. They'll blow your hair back, you know. So, but you know where you are. The D class guy's not out there talking about, well, you know, I would have won nationals. If it's like, dude, you shoot at D class, you're not going to win nationals. Okay? I mean,
it's you're just gonna not going to get close. And that's, objective
you don't,
view.
You literally do not possess the skill. The GMs are going to win nationals.
And it's that objective view that is super, it's almost like it's just really good feedback. You know, I don't want to say it's even critics, because sometimes the timer will laugh at you. I know sometimes I'll shoot a little timer like, damn, I'm fucking slow. Like, you know, you look at something, you're like, wow, 16 seconds. Nice. Their last run was 12. Like, why am I so, you know? And then again, I used to record myself on a lot of runs that I would do, like, because during lunchtime, I was on the firearms, you know, I was on like the firearms instruction side. And during lunchtime, guys would go to lunch, some guys could stay and shoot and stuff like that. We would set up a little course and we'd shoot and we'd time each other and see who get the fastest time. And, you know, I would try to always record myself to see where I messed up, whether it was on a reload or, you know, my footwork, my draw speed, whatever the case may be. And being able to self-diagnose is super important. But if you don't know how to diagnose, that's kind of where it's important to maybe talk to somebody or have some type of guidance. And again, there's a lot of great instructors out there that I follow. You know, luckily I've been able to develop relationships with guys like yourself and Shane and JJ and Max Michelle. And there's some of the world's best shooters. And I've been able to kind of bounce ideas off of them. And it's been super eye-opening. But again, as it pertains to law enforcement, it's always good to have that law enforcement connection with that DT background and now bring in firearms. So it's kind of more specific to the job, because again, like if you were to take a normal cop and then put them up against someone like JJ Ricaza and they're using UTM rounds or, you know, marking rounds, like you're probably not going to win. I could probably willing to bet a significant amount of money that JJ would probably have four rounds in your forehead before you would even probably get the gun out of the holster. That's just facts.
Oh yeah.
And that's absolutely actually not even, like, and that's not exaggerating. Like that would probably happen.
Oh no, no. JJ could absolutely do that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's like, ridiculously fast. Yeah. But it's like, once you get to a certain level, you kind of start self-diagnosing. And to your point earlier, it's like when you get to these higher levels, like especially one of the hardest things you can do in USPSA is climb out of B class. There's mathematical reasons for it, but it's very difficult. Once you get into the A class, master and grandmaster, like these guys can do. They understand what it takes. Like they have a depth of understanding of shooting that most people don't have. So along the way, you start learning how to self-diagnose, and then those guys can help you. Hey, have you thought about it this way or that way? Because it's really funny, like, when you make it to like, you get into that A class, M class, and GM class, we're all saying the same things. We might say it differently. And some guys, you know, might have had the benefit, like JJ or Shane, being sponsored shooters. So they get a little more time to shoot than other folks. you know, but even though like they're like national, they're national like world champion shooters, like I'm just a masterclass guy. That's it. Right. Like I'm not winning nationals this year or anything, but you know, don't anybody get fooled. But once you get to a certain level, you have a depth of understanding, you know what it takes. Like I know what it takes to win nationals. Like I would have to literally dedicate my life to it and, you know, work on a lot of footwork stuff and live fire a hell of a lot more than what I'm able to do right now and dry fire all the time and hope my elbow stays together. You know, there's a lot of stuff that has to be done. I understand what it takes. I'm just not able to do it like those guys can. But it's like once you kind of cross over that, you're into that zone of where it's like you have this depth of knowledge. And then that's when you got to like help other people, like help drag these people up and see that like, hey, man, especially as cops, like this whole draw and fire portion of the qual that's like they give you 8 seconds to do should only take you 3. Like that's the goal, not I'm going to use this time hack that they somebody pulled out of their ass and just made up. It's like, no, we need to find what's possible, not what's easy. Because quals for the most part are easy. All they do is shield the department from liability. But realistically, you know, knowing what I know now after competing for these years and competing with people who aren't cops, they're like plumbers and shit and would smoke most of the people I know, you know, that are cops. It's like after competing with them, the minimum standards, I don't even think at this point are minimum. They're below minimum. They're not enough. Oh, they're not good enough.
They're pretty bad.
If passing your qual is the best you can do at your department, you're probably not good enough. If you win in a shooting, it could just be because of luck.
Well, I mean that, and the fact that people fail quals is also kind of scary. You know,
it's mind boggling.
You know, that would shoot our quals, you know, obviously for state qualification or, you know, for agency qualification, you would shoot, you know, 2 rounds, center mass, reload, 2 rounds, center mass, watch your target, you know, and then the target would flip or whatever. And you would hear guys, you know, ta-dow, ta-dow, right? And then you'd hear people, ta-ow, ta-ow, and you'd be done. You're going to be in the holster, done. And you just hear ta-ow, ta-ow, and you're like, fuck. Like you just think about you'd shot, reloaded, shot, accurate hits on target, gun back in the holster, and they're still on their on the shooting portion of that task. Just like you said, it takes 8 seconds to shoot two rounds, reload 2 rounds, center mass at 7 yards or something super close, right? Scary. And the fact that some people fail quals and they have to reshoot is even more scary.
I don't want to come off as like I'm bashing these folks. I'm not bashing them. I'm just saying that the typical skill of law enforcement is not where it needs to be. It is not good enough. It is not their fault either. They don't know. You don't know what you don't know, right? So you go out to a match and you see that there are guys out there, the guys and girls both, that are, you know, accountants and lawyers and plumbers and mechanics, and they can absolutely smoke almost everybody at your department. Then you've got to start looking into that and saying there's something to it. You can't let your ego get bruised and be like, well, you know, I'm Johnny Tactical and I do it for real. Paper targets don't shoot back, blah, blah. I got a friend of mine, Paul Kerr. He's a national level guy. Like, I think he finished maybe 6th at nationals this year or this.
So he's pretty good.
Oh, he's insanely good. Yeah. And Paul was like some kind of like construction guy, like a foreman for a construction company and things like that. I think he's might be getting another job doing sales or something like that. But I mean, he's just a regular dude, and that dude is fast as shit. I mean, that guy, you wouldn't look at him and think, oh, he's, you know, Johnny Tactical, because he's not. He's just a shooter. But he'll slay most Johnny Tacticals I know. Slay them. And it's just, it's like that level of skill exists. And if you're that far behind the curve, there's nothing you can do to make up for it. There's no, utilizing cover will somehow balance the skill differential between, you know, the average policeman and Paul. No, it's not. It's not going to work for you. Shooting is the number one best tactic you could ever have in a gunfight.
Right. And two, when I keep saying the word scary, it's scary in the sense of when they actually have to use their weapon in the real world, in the line of duty, they will become scared because they're not familiar with that level of not even just pressure, but you're not getting that response. You're not mentally capable of being as fast as you want to. So then you become scared and fear happens. And then when fear has, and okay, it's okay to be fearful. It's okay to act, you know, it's okay to fear, but if that's all you have and there's no basis but just being scared, just like you said, the outcome is more than likely going to be, if you do win, is probably going to be luck, you know, or your ability to, maybe you have higher level tactics than the individual you're, you know, trying to stop, and that's how you win. But again, it's better to be well-rounded and have a good fundamental shooting base where speed and accuracy is really driving those trains, and you have a good tactical base as well. If you combine those two, your outcome is more than likely going to be successful. And that's kind of where we're trying to bring all the pieces together, is that having that successful outcome.
Yeah. Like I don't like to teach like, oh God, all the tactical stuff could be debated to the end of time. Right. Like I don't like teaching
like the vehicle stuff,
like how to clear
like the vehicle
rooms.
Stuff, Andrew.
I don't like teaching any of that shit. I don't like teaching any of that shit. I just don't care because I don't feel like we're there yet. I don't feel like in law enforcement, we need to really worry about CQB as much as we need to worry about being a fast, accurate shooter, because you can't out tactical the gun problem. You can't out tactical the shooting problem. You can wear all the high speed, low drag shit you want to wear. You can, you know, look like your friendly neighborhood Delta Recon Ranger SEAL when you clear your house or whatever.
Every day.
But
every
if
night.
You can't, when the shooting problem arises, if you can't perform, none of that mattered. You'll just look really cool, but not be able to actually do much of anything.
Look really cool dead, right?
Yeah, man, it'll be the coolest. You'll have the coolest footwork to your death.
Yeah,
you know, because you can't shoot somebody before they shoot you.
No, it's actually, you know, it's not funny, but it is. It's kind of a point that we're trying to make.
Well, no, it's funny. It's funny because you get on Instagram and you get on social media.
Oh, the memes,
and,
beautiful.
Oh my God, these guys will go. They will spend hours arguing with each other in the comments,
brother.
Over silly shit like footwork or gear or whatever, when they could have just bought some live rounds and went to the range and like
just shot
got
with
better
a stock
or dry
gun.
Fired at home.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, it's the Indian, not the arrow.
Yeah. And that's still a very valid analogy. You know, and two, probably when this episode comes out, you know, we're in the process of releasing a dry fire training course, more geared towards those that are going into law enforcement or have just gotten out or just want a really good fundamental base of how to advance your speed and accuracy. So Andrew, is on the EFT team and we decided to we saw a problem. We just got done discussing that problem for about 45 minutes. The first 10 minutes is us talking about deer hunting and the importance of that. But
that was my favorite part, by the way. Favorite part.
It's you know what? We should do an episode on that next time. You know, I'm totally cool with that. We should do an episode while after we get done hunting, we can then it's fresh in our brain and we're in the moment, we can talk about the fresh kills. Anyways, I want you to dive into a little bit about the course that you've developed and what the purpose of that course was, and then what can people expect to get out of that course?
Okay, so the course we've got coming out, or it may be out by the time this posts, is a pre-academy firearm. So it's designed for someone who has very little or no firearms experience whatsoever, right? It's going to get you up and going, and it's going to lay a good foundation. So when you go to the academy, if you've done everything in the video, you've watched it and done the dry fire drills that I give you, you should be pretty successful. you shouldn't have any problems with your qual, because we're going to go over things like how to press the trigger without moving the gun, you know, and how to drill that in dry fire so that you don't have to worry about it. So when you go out to your academy and you have to fire some live rounds, it's going to take you a second maybe to get used to the recoil of the gun and all that sort of thing. But it's not going to, you're going to have a basis, a fundamental there of like, okay, Andrew said, all I got to do is align the sights. He showed me how to do that. And I got to press the trigger without moving it. And if I can do those things, given that most police quals have pretty generous time restraints, if I can do those fairly quickly, then I'll have no problem passing. Because there's, you know, in my years of law enforcement, there's a lot of people who get very, very nervous come in service time when it's time to qual with their gun. Like, they are super stressed out about it. And it's like, you should never be stressed out about it. Like, it's not that hard.
Should but be fun.
Everybody's got to start somewhere, and this is at somewhere to start. Yeah, it should be fun. Like, I look forward to in service. I'm like, oh yeah, I get to shoot. Like, I hate shooting the quals. I want to do all the drills afterwards. You know, it's like the qual, let's get it knocked out and let's get to running and gunning, you know. But that's basically the course. We're gonna get into the three fundamentals of shooting: grip, sights, and triggers. I don't do breath control, follow through, or any of that shit, because there's no need. It's grip, sights, and triggers, right? If you grip the gun, line your sights, and press the trigger without fucking any of that up, you're going to do great. You're going to absolutely it. Great. And then awesome. there's some draw stuff in there about how to draw the gun, start developing, like lay the foundation to start developing a good, efficient draw, having the gun, presenting the gun, and then getting into your three fundamentals, right? Your grip, sights, and triggers. And making good shots. And I'm really excited about it. I hope it helps a lot of people and makes things more clear. The problem will be when they go see their academy instructors and they're like, well, you should ride the reset and pin the trigger to the rear. And they're going to be like, this other guy said not to. I'm telling you, don't do it. Don't do it. I don't care who tells you to do it. If you do it, just when they're not looking, don't
just
do it.
Fake anymore. It. Yeah. Just fake it till you make it. Just freaking graduate, get the hell out of there, get your certification.
Be like, pow. And then the gun cycles and you just yell, click, and then shoot again, but your finger was already off the trigger.
Yeah. It's
like that. I don't know. Don't do it. It's terrible. Terrible
habit. Yeah. No, it truly is a bad habit. You know, and again, we plan on, and I'll put the link to the course in the show notes. So if you guys want to check it out, feel free. We're also going to do other courses. We're going to start working on other courses, you know, particularly for those that are kind of in the intermediate to advanced realm, as well as doing things with iron sights and certain optics and things like that. So Andrew's going to really drive that train home, working on establishing a page so you guys, where Andrew can continuously put out some content, and you guys can learn from him. Again, he has a very good resume that is extremely applicable to the law enforcement profession. As it pertains to also, he's a DT guy and a gun guy. So having those two together are very rare and also very beneficial. So for those that just say, I'm just a gun guy, good. Just learn gun stuff from them. But that integration is super important. But again, if you guys want to reach out to Andrew, where can they find you?
Right now you can find me on Instagram at Armed Threat Solutions. And that is the only social media I have.
So the OnlyFans account, Armed Threat Solutions. Yeah. Armed Threat. Yeah.
My OnlyFans account is just pictures of my feet to finance my shooting habits. You know, girls got to do what girls got to do, you know.
He puts bullets in between his toes. He'll do all kinds of weird things for you guys for almost.
That was a request from you anyway, and I still haven't received my $20.
it's coming via PayPal. It's Bitcoin. I don't know how to do any of that, but yeah, guys, check it out. The link's in the show notes. Andrew, my man, always a pleasure. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to follow Andrew, his links will be in the show notes below. Be sure that you subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. New episodes launch on Monday every other week.